Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live from Judea to the world. You're part of it wherever you are, somewhere between Jerusalem and Hebron, right? Yerushalayim and Hebron. That's where I'm at right now, and it's great to be with you here on the Land of Israel Network, the Land of Israel Network, right? Which its first letters spell out the word loin, right? Without the Land of Israel Network, the loin, right? And that means that we have to gird our loins, and we have to fight hard to be strong in this land, return to it, to serve God in joy. And it is Hanukkah 5777, right? 57, no, just joking, 5778, Tiye Shnat Ir Chevron, Tafshin Ayin Chet, 5778, that's right, the 8 stands for Chet, and Chet stands for Hebron. This year we're going to make Hebron an awesome, awesome place. We're going to make it into the jewel that it's supposed to be, the seat of our fathers and mothers in the Holy Land. And today is also Hanukkah. It's the Festival of Lights. And today's show, we're going to think a little bit about the issue of gratitude. Gratitude. We're really going to focus in on gratitude. Sadly, I am grateful that I have a great partner for the show often called Rabbi Mike Foyer, but he is not with me today. And I'm grateful for that too, because the secret to gratitude is to also be grateful for things that aren't so perfect in your life. And that's one of the things that I learned from the great and holy Rabbi Arush, Rabbi Shalom Arush, who really taught us in the way of Rabbi Nachman that we have to even be thankful. We have to really out loud thank God for the cuts on our toes, for the whatever stupidity we feel that we have, whatever limitations we think we have. It's okay, and God has planned that for us. Even today, I lost something that is important to me. I can't find it right now, and I pray to find it, but at the same time, I'm going to thank God. I'm going to thank God that I haven't found it, and that is a great trick. That is a great psychological, spiritual trick to really just say thank you for the challenges. It really relieves you of a lot of stress. It makes you feel immediately much better. And the holiday of Hanukkah itself is dedicated to gratitude. It's dedicated to saying out loud, I praise thee, O Lord, right? I thank you, God. And we sing every day the Hallel gratitude prayer, which is long and meaningful and has beautiful melodies. But we're supposed to do that every single day. We're supposed to thank God every single day. And that's an aspect of Hanukkah, which myself, I don't usually focus on. I usually focus on the aspects of the victory, the moral victory, the fact that some Jews rose up against the Syrian Greeks fearlessly and inspired a nation and fought for purity and fought for Jewish sovereignty. But this year I also want to focus a little bit more on gratitude as a characteristic trait. I recently came across some mental diet written in the 20s or 30s. This mental diet was all about just having no negative thoughts for 1 week straight. And every time you fail, you have to start the week over again. And I tried it for a few days. It was hard like anything, you know. Having a nice Jewish brain means being judgmental all the time. And being a human being means that you have constant negative thoughts and emotions. That being said, one of the great replacement emotions for jealousy, for licentiousness, for for honor, self-aggrandizement, is really turning all those emotions into gratitude and to just saying thank you, God, for everything. Even thank you, God, for my not such great traits that I wish I could get rid of. That's a big one. That's a big one. To really be thankful for the traits that you want to get over but you haven't been able to. Let's hit a big one, folks. I don't know about you, but I could talk about me. Laziness. Oh, Hashem, thank you for my laziness. Though I pray to you every single day to help me overcome any laziness, please, God, you know, I also thank you because I know that you've given me these traits in order to surmount, in order to deal with. And that's your choice, God. You knew what was perfect for me. You created a world in imperfection, and we're thankful for it. And we're going to help release things that are imperfect by recognizing their potential to bring about perfection. But we're also going to we're going to be ambitious, but also at the same time be thankful for what has not been yet achieved. And take a moment and hear sometimes, you know, I only have really one book. That's not true. There's like maybe two or three books outside of Judaism that I think are super profound. One of them is the Tao Te Ching. If you read it properly, I think it's a supremely profound book. Another one is a book that I highly recommend that Zev Orenstein, my good friend of mine, recommended to me, which I recommend back to you, which is called Essentialism, and it is really an essential book about thinking essentially about what is essential. Anyway, I'm talking about a lot of things that are important and running through my mind, and it's really about gratitude for me today. And I'm grateful for my new place here in beautiful Efrat. If you're thinking about making Aliyah, it's a fantastic place to live. It's great for Anglos. It's great for Israelis. It's right in between Hebron and Jerusalem. Very, very convenient and lots of fun. And the Gush itself, Gush Etzion, the Gush block, excuse me, the Etzion block is ready for you to buy great bakery goods and liquors and children's things and just... It's just very, very well set up, and it's fantastic to see a place that was really destroyed in 1948 be so revivified. That's a Chabad word. You know, you say the word, anybody says the word vivified, they've either been to a Chabad class or are a Chabadnik. Well, we got a little bit of homework, of housework to clean up. First thing I want you to know that there was overwhelming response to the hashtag TrueBlueJew raffle or first three people that wrote to me. Now, one person who won the last raffle of the Lego set wrote to me also trying to win and said, I won the last one, you know, let me try my luck again. But that good person did not read paragraph 3, subsection 6, paragraph D, which clearly stipulated that within a year of winning one awesome victory on the Yishai Fleischer show, one cannot win a second time, certainly not 2 weeks in a row. But you obviously did not read the bylines of the raffle. But in any case, God bless you, all of you guys who wrote in. And it's been a little bit of a crazy week for me, and I'll be writing back to all of you. And all those that wrote in hashtag TrueBlueJew. First thing, those first three that first two or three, I got to listen back to the show or remind me, will get directly from Tchelet.com. They're very excited about it. I've spoken to them about it. They're very excited to send you your raffle victory. And just the fact that people wrote me in my inbox, I got hashtag TrueBlueJew. It just made me so happy. And let me look right now at my own tzitzit, my own. There they are, beautiful. The beautiful snail extracted blue dye on the tzitzit. It looks so good, so royal, so majestic, and so very, very reminderous of the amazing time that we're living in. So yes, I will get to the True Blue Jews out there. All of you are True Blue Jews, if you're there or not there. And women too, okay? I know this is, it seems like a men's mitzvah, but there's a women's side to this thing. I haven't exactly figured it out yet. That's okay. Maybe you can write in and write to me what the women's side of the Tchelet story is. But in any case, I could tell you that seeing my son, who is 6 years old, walking around with Tchelet makes a tremendous difference. And when I look at a person who's not wearing Tchelet yet, I'm just, I kind of like, I want to grab the person and say, come on. Not because I want to feel superior in my religious observance. Far from it. It's because I want to say, we're living in a time of redemption, a time of coming home to the land of Israel, where great knowledge is being released into this world. You're a part of it, right? So, like, take the step. And sometimes we need a little push to take the step. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm not in any way trying to be hauding my religious observance. Far from it. We're trying to say, what an amazing time. Please join us, brothers and sisters. That reminds me of a story that one time I was giving a speech in Muncie. And I was taught months in New York. I was talking about Aliyah, the great opportunity to ascend and live in the land of Israel. So I was talking about Aliyah, and I was talking with such loving tones. And then somebody raised their hand and they're like, "You're being haughty. You think that your religious observance is better than ours." And I said to this person, I'll never forget it, I said to him, and this just came to me. I said to him, let's kind of reanalyze the situation. I have left my family in Eretz Yisrael. I have flown over here. I have to get up in front of this audience and speak and prepare for it. And my whole message is, brothers, please come live next to me. I want you to be my neighbor and friend. I want to be closer to you. That is the opposite of haughtiness. That is love. That is love. It's total, undeniable, and immutable love. And that's why I'm here today. I'm not here to tell you you're bad. I'm here to tell you, brother, I miss you. I want you to live closer to me. I think that was a great answer. And it certainly put and he said to me afterwards, he said, "You have an interesting way of speaking where on the one hand, I feel like you're giving me a slap and a hug and a kiss at the same time. How do you do that?" So that was really fun. And yes, if you ever want me to come out to your community, write me an email, right? Write me an email, and people have, and I'd love to come out to you. One last piece of housework before we get to the Torah portion, which we have to get to, so much to cover, and I'm here all by my lonesome, but I feel like I'm with you. But still, we have a lot to cover, so let's get to it. Before we do, just one note about the friends who have also helped support and sponsor the Yishai Fleischer Show. Last week, I made an impassioned request for assistance, for support, for partnership. But really, I don't even like any of those words. I don't like any of those words. I don't like support. Talk about partnership. Forget it. I mean, nobody here is a partner. That's not the right word. The right word is you are empowered to spread Torah. You could just say to yourself, "I am spreading Torah around the world." That's one of the things that I do. Along with my many other projects, I spread Torah around the world. I support and spread Torah around the world. That's an amazing thing. So people who are, you know, part of my family of trying to broadcast this thing are really empowered to send Torah around the world. And that's what you're doing. You're sending Torah around the world when you're part of this story. So I want to mention a few things about that. We have our good friend Betzalel, who has been spreading Torah throughout the world and has been helping out the show so much. I want to thank you so much, Betzalel. And that's amazing that you're out there. And he also wrote me on... People also write me on Facebook sometimes. That's a lot of fun to get a Facebook message. If you can't figure out how to email me... but you will be able to, which is, you know, Yishai at thelandofisrael.com. We should probably get a loin, right? Should we get like an at loin? You think people that'll go too far? In any case, thank you very much, Betzalel. Thank you very much to Scott and Ellen for your spreading of Torah throughout the world, your empowerment. Thank you so much to my good friend Jack, who sponsors the show in honor of his wife and children. And his sister Sarah and their family, all the good folks out there in Brooklyn that I miss so much, I love to see. And thank you to my good friend Cynthia, who is a regular listener to the show, and has decided to spread Torah out in a very meaningful way throughout the world, and herself is coming closer to Chabad. And is out there in Northern California, in a faraway place, and yet it's so amazing where the reaches of Torah and Israel are getting to. And I want to thank you so much, Cynthia. Thank you so much, all of my friends out there. Thank you so much. And thank you to all of those who just had a thought for 1 second that they wanted to, throw some be supporters, I'm looking for the right words here, be empowered. Just a thought, you know, I felt this in the ether. I felt that a lot of people were like, yes, I'm support. And you know what I want you to know? I myself am always thinking about how to support Torah institutions. I think I might have told you, I myself and my organization, Kuma, we've decided to give money to the Tomb of Joseph. Why? Specifically to the Tomb of Joseph? Because I'm not there. I'm in Hebron, I'm in Jerusalem, and I'm in Judea, I'm fighting for it, and I'm raising money for it, that kind of thing. Okay, great. But like, I'm not out there for Joseph, and the Tomb of Joseph has been destroyed, so I'm sending money that way. Because money is like your long hand. And it's like, you know why I get excited about these things, friends? Do you know why? Because I am actually not a money person. And for 40 years of my life, I really just did not think about, I just don't think about it, right? And there are some people with great talents that think about this incredible resource called money. And since I've understood the power of it, I've come to understand how much, though I'm not a natural person to it, how I like to, you know, use it properly. How it, like it, like it, because it doesn't call to me in a kind of I don't have a tremendous tava, like a tremendous desire, like, to think about money. So now that I'm thinking more about it, because I need to help build up Hebron and make it a better place, and the projects that we're doing, I'm realizing the beauty of it, really the purity of it. That's one thing I've come to realize. There's a tremendous purity in it. And there's a tremendous purity in giving, and I see now that, like, when you send money, it's like sending your hand. It's like sending your own hand to something. And so I'm always thinking to myself, which yeshiva do I want to support? I want to give you an example of something that happened to me. Just the other day, Rabbi Shalom Arush came to speak here in Efrat. It was awesome. I went to hear him speak. My wife and I went to hear him speak. And they were asking for donations for the yeshiva, for the Chutz Shel Chesed yeshiva, which means like a string or the smallest element of kindness. That's the name of the yeshiva. Beautiful name. And I said to the guy, this young man was asking me for a donation. I said to him, I just gave, you know, for me, what is a lot to donate to a different yeshiva. So he says to me, and I said, I'm giving 180 shekel a month to this yeshiva for students to learn and get a stipend so that they can learn and sit and learn Torah. He says to me, are you giving away all of the tenth that you're supposed to give? Because you got to give minimally a tenth of what you earn to charity, quote unquote, or tzedakah, or to the causes. And I'm like, and the way he said it, it was just like, okay, I make X. You have to give away, you know, Y, which is the tenth. And are you doing that? That's another thing. Meiser is such a beautiful one. We learned about it with Jacob. Yaakov, in his most intimate moment with God, says, whatever you give me, I will tithe onto you. I will tithe onto you. Anyway, these are, when I'm talking about these things, I'm not talking from a place of like just, you know, trying to get anything out of you. I'm talking to you about how I myself I'm approaching the issue of money. You know, it's a resource, and I'm raising three children here. I gotta pay, a mortgage. It's all, you know, it's not easy. It's really not easy. It's all on the edge always, you know. But it's caused me, as I'm maturing now and being a dad in my first apartment that I'm owning here in the land of Israel, I'm thinking about the issues of money, and I'm trying to understand the spiritual element of it. And one of the most important things that I could liken it to is blood. And the other word for monies in Hebrew is bloods. And that's because it makes the world go round. It's the thing that provides sustenance for the world. And that's what you do. You're sending your blood. You're sending your hand when you're sending it towards a cause. So I want you to think about supporting a local cause, you know, maybe a local synagogue, a local Chabad, a local Torah learning. But then, of course, the building of the land of Israel. And that's what the first Lubavitcher Rebbe sat in prison for on Yutet Kislev, on the 19th of Kislev. He sat in prison for sending money to the land of Israel, for Torah learning in the land of Israel, and for development of the land of Israel. By the way, interesting term that they use today, like when people aren't called fundraisers, they're called directors of development. And that is such a better term, right? Because that's what it's about. It's about development. It's about sending your energy towards something. Any case, I want to thank again all the folks that have become empowered to spread Torah, and together we're doing it. Thank you very much. And let's go on now to talk about the Torah portion for a little bit. And this is a fascinating Torah portion, not an easy one to swallow, because of the second part of the Torah portion, which is the conflict between the brothers and Joseph. But I want to focus a little bit more on the beginning of the Torah portion in the time that I have with you today. And by the way, you are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show. We're broadcasting from Judea on the Land of Israel Network. Oh, and I forgot to say, if you're going to sponsor something, one of the things that you have to sponsor, I really feel that way in my heart, is the Land of Israel Network, the various shows. Thank you for going to YishaiFleischer.com. But please don't forget also to support the fathers and mothers in Hebron, which need to be honored. That's another thing that money does. It honors people. And we have to do kibud avem. We have to honor our fathers and mothers. And I highly recommend you go to Hebron Fund, HEBRONFUND.org, and become a sponsor of beautification of the causes of our of the places that our mothers and fathers are buried, the initial Israel, shall we call it. The first purchase, right? And there you go, right? Check that out. Check out the confluence of issues here, because I'm talking now again about the first place in the Land of Israel, spiritual, God-given, and purchased. It's the money that solidified that. May God bless us to be matzliach. By the way, I think they came out this week also with some statistics saying that some 30% of Israelis are still under the poverty line. It's almost hard to imagine, but I know there is truth to, I don't know if that statistic is true, because the party that came out with it may be a bit of an interested party. But in any case, there is still, you know, we still have to give charity and development at the same time. Any case, let's get back to the Torah portion. One more step before the Torah portion is the issue of the recognition of Jerusalem, which really happened on Yutet Kislev. That just reminded me when we talked about it before, when the Lubavitcher Rebbe was in prison, and then he was released. It was though a great a release of Hasidic light came into the world of knowledge, although it was always there. So too, you know, Trump's recognition of Jerusalem. I got a Facebook message from a listener who said the following. He says this is from Providence. He says to me, Yishai, yeah, Donald Trump said Jerusalem is the capital and we will move the embassy. And then he signed the waiver. So no real change. And I know at least of one dead, meaning to say people have been already hurt. Come on, there's no reason to believe that Trump will follow through on this, but we do know people have died and more will. I know you like Trump, but keep your wits about you as we watch what he actually does. A few comments on this. First thing, I don't like or not like. I accept the fact that there's a president of the United States. Some people we can work with, some people are we have to fight with. In this case, it looks like there's an administration that we can work with. But more importantly is that the recognition of Jerusalem, this is important for everybody to understand, was not about what happened on the ground here in Jerusalem. Although that would be nice, but it was much more about a fight for international recognition. And today the forces of anti-Hanukkah, the anti-Hanukkah forces, the UN, the world's largest anti-Semitic organization, you heard these are Yishai phrases that you could use. You could say, and by the way, it's better to quote a person, just like I like to quote people, better to say, you know, Yishai, my friend Yishai, who I listen to, says the UN is the world's largest anti-Semitic organization. That's what I call them, the world's largest anti-Semitic organization. That's just my terminology for them. UNESCO, the legitimate arm of the jihad, okay? UNESCO, the legitimate arm of the jihad. In any case, these forces are desperate to do what? To really cover up the light of Jerusalem. And came out to Donald Trump on Yutet Kislev right before Hanukkah and said, no, it's time to light the light of Jerusalem. He lit the menorah of Jerusalem. Now, you know, you give him credit. There might have been also, and I heard some other shows on this network that talked about the Saudi involvement in this issue. Listen to Josh Haston's show. Dan Diker was a visitor. Was a guest on the show. There's many other reasons. There's realpolitik reasons for sure. That doesn't matter. You don't have to, you know, delve into every psychological aspect of who this person is and why they did it. The most important thing is that at this time, when forces want to douse the fire of Jerusalem, came the American administration and said, no, Jerusalem's the capital of Israel. Duh. It was like an aha moment. And that was really cool. So speaking of those kind of moments, let's get back to the Torah portion. Joseph, as we remember, was in jail. And we didn't get a chance to talk about it a lot last week at the end there. But he helped explain the dreams of the butler and the baker, the whodunit, the Sar HaMashkim, the head of wines, whatever it's called. I don't know. You guys remember right now the word, but the guy who's the head of the wine serving, and the head baker, the chief baker. The chief baker gets hanged, right? And he gets killed, as Joseph told him he would. And the head of the wines, the head steward, was returned to his post. By the way, therein lies a secret that the Torah is telling us. It says, less carbohydrates, more liquids, and more wine, right? Because you see, the baker, the minister of the baked goods, he got hanged because he was making everybody fat, right? But the minister of wines and liquids was returned to his job, because that is what we all need more of. We need more liquids, less sugar and baked goods. In any case, you see, the Torah's got many, many layers of secrets that it reveals to us. That part was a little bit humorous, smiley face. If Rabbi Mike had been here, he would have laughed, and you would have known that I was joking. In any case, Joseph continues to languish in prison. He's languishing in prison. What a great word. As I was in Northern California, I drove over a bridge and I saw Alcatraz, the rock. I saw the rock. Now, I didn't go on one of the tours of the rock, but it was cool to actually see this prison. And I immediately thought of Yosef HaTzadik. I thought about Joseph. Yosef HaTzadik. And I thought of him in this like deep, dark dungeon prison, right in the rock. In any case, he's down there in prison. And the steward of the wines is back at the job with Paro. And what happens to Paro? Well, Paro has two dreams, right? He has two dreams. He has dreams about these fat cows. When I say fat, I mean it's with an F and a PH, because these were some good-looking cows, fat. They were fat cows. And these fat cows were grazing by the Nile, and he saw these skinny, emaciated Holocaust cows, if you will, come out and ingest, devour, take down these fat cows, and yet they continued to seem emaciated. And then he saw the same type of dream with these ears of corn. The first ones were healthy and ripe, and the next ones were burnt and you know, not healthy looking. And they somehow swallowed. They came up behind the good healthy ones and swallowed them. And nobody could, none of the great wise men and sorcerers and magicians of Egypt could help Pharaoh deal with this dream that really, really troubled him. And he asked them, they gave him solutions, but he was not satisfied. This is from our commentators, that they did give him solutions, but he was not satisfied. And then finally, the chief butler, the wine steward, says to Pharaoh, I didn't want to talk about this because I don't want to remind you of the time that you were angry at me, but I was in jail with the chief baker, and there was a Hebrew boy, and the language that he uses is a bit derogatory. It's like you know, there was this slave, and he's a Hebrew, and he was there in trouble, but yet he seemed to possess this ability to interpret dreams. And I was returned to my post, and the other guy, he was hanged. He didn't say Pharaoh hanged him. He didn't want to make him look bad, but he was hanged. Seemingly this young man is good with dream interpretation. And now this point, Joseph has been in jail for many years. And hold on one second, my kids are making too much noise. Hey kids, can you please make noise not close to my room? It's Mafriam, it's bothering the show. Thanks guys, love you. All right, that was the little kids. Any case, Joseph has been in jail now for 10 years, and he is, you know, what happens to you when you're in 10 years in jail? Friends of mine who know that I love the movie Shawshank Redemption, like my friend Zev knows that, and we know that the problem with being in jail for a long time is that you become institutionalized, right? You become institutionalized. You get used to it, and you become like a servant in your head. You're totally locked into that, you know, that mindset of being a prisoner. And when they call Joseph out of prison, this is an amazing point to me. He gets shaved, a haircut, and switches clothes, and then he stands in front of Pharaoh. He just immediately is willing to stand in front of Pharaoh. Let's read it in the Torah itself. The chamberlain of the cupbearers spoke up before Pharaoh. "My transgressions do I mention today. Pharaoh had become incensed at his servants and placed me in the ward of the house of the chamberlain of the butchers, me and the chamberlain of the bakers. We dreamt a dream on the same night, I and he. Each one of us, according to the interpretation of his dream, did we dream. And there with us was a Hebrew youth, a slave of the chamberlain of the butchers. We related it to him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. He interpreted for each of us in accordance with his dream. And it was just that as he interpreted for us, so did it happen. Me he restored to my post, and him he hanged." So Pharaoh sent and summoned Joseph, and they rushed him from the dungeon. He shaved and changed his clothes, and he came to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I dreamt a dream, but no one can interpret it. Now I heard it said of you that you can comprehend the dream and interpret it." Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, "That is beyond me. It is God who will respond with Pharaoh's welfare." Now, this is to me an amazing thing, okay? We are so often locked away in dungeons in our own mind, in our own life. And then when the opportunity presents itself, we're still there. We're still locked away in the past, right? And so many of us have not been able to assimilate the incredible rebirth of the Jewish people in the land of Israel as a modern day miracle that we can assimilate into our life and say, yes. How many of us have become rejectionist by either saying Israel is not religious enough, or Israel is too dangerous, or Israel is not liberal enough, right? There's many reasons to kind of push away from Israel, because we are not ready for the redemptive moment. We're still locked away in 2,000 years of exile. And here's Joseph, who was locked away in tens of years of imprisonment. And the minute the redemption moment comes in, he is totally ready for it. He's like, bang, I'm ready for change right now. How many of us are ready to take that diet because we realize we need to take that diet, or become people that exercise, or become people that learn Torah every single day? How many of us are, once we realize and have that moment of realization, how many of us are unable to make that change and say, yes, I am now going to be that person. I'm going to be a happier person. I'm going to be, you know, a better person. Like, how many of us are willing to make that immediate change? How many of us are willing to say, you know, yes, I can. I will do this thing. You know, here's Joseph, and he is just totally ready. And this, to me, is one of the great characteristic traits of righteous people: the ability to immediately incorporate redemption in a redemptive moment and say, yes, I'm willing to take that upon myself. I'm willing to be that person. And I can give you many more examples of people in the Torah. One of them, of course, is my hero Kalev ben Yefuneh, who was able to assimilate the idea of that it's time to go into the land of Israel now. And he was not like the other people who were afraid of that change. So Joseph is there, and he interprets the dream. Now, I read a few commentaries on why other people were having a hard time interpreting that dream. And the explanation, amongst many other explanations, is that first thing, Pharaoh and his helpers did not believe that God would want to help mankind and give a dream that was helpful. They lived in a milieu where gods were antithetical to humanity. You think about the Greek stuff; they're always fighting, taking, you know, human women and doing all kinds of troubles. They were like these, the gods, right, are these kind of mischievous creatures, according to the ancient traditions. In our much more enlightened worldview, I think, is that God is this great and incredible creator who wants to bring mankind to their great destiny. And that was completely anathema. They didn't understand how could it be that God would release a piece of information that would be useful. That's one of the interpretations. The other one, a more didactic one, that I read in the Chabad Chumash, which has some great questions and answers about problems in the Torah. And basically, One of the things that they didn't understand is that in the cow dream, the emaciated cows and the fat cows at some point stood together on the Nile at the same time, and that made them, they couldn't understand if it was seven various years, how could they coexist at the same time? Well, Joseph's answer is going to be that there is going to become a great famine into the land. And in that famine, we have to use the seven healthy years, the 7 years of plenty, in order to prepare and store up for the 7 years of famine. And therefore, they coexist, these 2 7 years. Right? This is a very didactic point, but I think a very interesting one. Like we have to use this time in order to prepare for the next time. There's a lot of depth in that, friends. We have to prepare. We have to prepare. We have to prepare our lives for different points later in our lives. We have to, you know, a person with vision understands the different processes. We have to surely prepare for our children's, bar and bat mitzvahs or whatever it is. And we have to prepare for the next world in this world. But in any case, I'm not going to go too deep into that. The bottom line is that was one of the innovations of Yosef interpreting the dream. Now, what I want to tell you about this dream, about Pharaoh's dream, is my personal innovation in this issue, which is, I think that what Pharaoh's dreams really represented on the deepest level, well, on one level, and another level in any case, who am I to say it's the deepest level? That's by the way, what you just heard is the humility that we have to have when we study Torah. We come up with an idea, we learn an idea, fine, there's another one. It may even contravene the other idea, but be humble about it. Torah is super, it's the word deep is not deep enough for the depth of the Torah. In any case, but I think personally, when I read these two dreams of Pharaoh's, I think that what the real dream is about, check this out, is a foreign nation is coming into our land, and we, Egypt, will swallow and destroy this nation. We will eat you up, Israel. The cows, one of the famous names that Joseph has in one of his monikers is the ox. His father will call him the ox, right? Joseph is an ox. He's a cow, a male cow. And what Pharaoh says is, you see, this healthy cow is coming in, but a different cow is going to swallow it up. On the deepest level, he says, Egypt, an inferior culture, is bigger and will swallow up your effort to bring a superior culture into this land by bringing Israel into Egypt. We will in the end destroy you. And the sheaves, right, the stalks of wheat. Well, we remember that Joseph said that he in his dream it was represented as a stalk of wheat, and the other stalks bow down to him. Says Pharaoh, guess what? The Egyptian 7 years of hunger will swallow your years of fat. We will engulf you in the end. And how do I know that that is what Pharaoh's dream is? Because immediately afterwards, Pharaoh is going to do three things in order to try to swallow Joseph and make him into an Egyptian. He's going to change his name. He's going to give him an Egyptian name, Tsafnapaneach. He is going to also put on him Egyptian clothing, right? Remember we talked about Tchelet in the beginning? Well, here's Egyptian clothing. And you remember last week's Torah portion, clothing, big thing, right? Joseph lets go of his clothing to Mrs. Potiphar, right? Hashtag me too. Mrs. Potiphar was attacking Yosef. By the way, interestingly enough, and exactly what I was describing to you, that sometimes Torah can flip the other way, and that you have to be willing to take a different interpretation. Rashi, of all commentators, says that Mrs. Potiphar may have meant her efforts to snag Joseph. She may have meant that for the good, because she had a dream. She had a vision that she would have a child from Joseph or her daughter. And in the end, it was going to be her daughter, but that was what she was trying to fulfill. This is according to Rashi. In any case, Joseph is given new name, new clothes, and a new Egyptian wife. What else can you do to destroy a person's identity? You change his clothing, you change his name, you give him an assimilated wife, seemingly. Of course, we know secretly that she is not an Egyptian at all, but rather his own family. I'll tell you about that a little bit later. But in any case, there is so much effort to assimilate Joseph into Egypt. And indeed, later on, he's going to look, when his brothers come, they're going to just see, what are they going to see? They're going to see an Egyptian standing before them. And so, ladies and gentlemen, there is an effort to swallow up Joseph in this world. And look at the tomb of Joseph today in the midst of Shechem, in the midst of the city of Shechem. The name of the city is changed. It's called Nablus, right? The place itself is destroyed. His clothing is destroyed, right? And there's a new sovereign there who's Palestine. They've done everything but erase Joseph, right? And that is why I think that we must remember Joseph. We must remember Joseph. And just as Joseph was taken up by the Jewish people from Egypt when they walked through the desert to the land of Israel, so too we must raise up his bones again today. The tomb of Joseph is a key in my heart. I just know it in my heart that it is a key to the redemptive process. We must beautify, strengthen the presence of Jewish people around the tomb of Joseph and bring up the great site, which is today in the middle of a totally Arab city, Palestinian controlled, and the site is often destroyed, right? So the name is different. It's now Nablus. The wife is different. It's the Palestinian Authority, and the tomb itself, instead of beautified, is often destroyed. The clothes are changed. Isn't that interesting? And so the tomb of Joseph lies there waiting for us to remember Joseph. And that is the dream of Egypt. The dream of Egypt is, no, Jewish people, you will not bring a new culture into this world. We will smother your culture. Yes, you're a Hebrew, and yes, you have these powers of interpreting dreams, but we will turn you into one of us. We'll turn you into one of us. At the same time, and how do we turn you into one of us? We're going to aggrandize you, right? At first, we're going to aggrandize you. Joseph, you're going to become just, you know, really the top one of us. We're going to assimilate you into the top echelons of our culture. Later, when you guys become too big, we're going to enslave you. Whatever we're going to do, we're going to kill your baby boys. We're going to throw them into the Nile. In whatever efforts we can make, we're going to try to subsume you into our thing, and Israel's name shall be lost. Yes, Joseph, says God to Joseph, you know, you're in charge now of making sure that that does not happen, that somehow the Jewish people are separated out and will be able to emerge out of the womb of the cauldron womb, if I can mix metaphors, of Egypt and become the nation of Israel in the cauldron womb of Egypt. So a lot of very powerful moments there. And Joseph is going to go out onto Egypt, and he's going to prepare the land for the 7 years of famine. And in this way, he's going to prepare for his brothers to have to come down and to ask for grains and food because of the famine that is going to strike the Middle East. And it is just Joseph who will have created Egypt as a supplier of food in these very harsh years, all in an intricate plot in order to bring his brothers down, cause them to repent, and we'll learn about that, and at the end, eventually, bring down Jacob and all the house of Israel into Egypt in preparation for their enslavement, only to have the glorious Exodus. One final note for today's show. I want to talk about Joseph once again. This is the time of Joseph. This is the time that we have to think about Joseph. Who is this daughter of Potiphar, Osnat bat Potipera, that Joseph is going to marry? Is he marrying an Egyptian woman? Oh my gosh, right? Later on, by the way, speaking of marrying an Egyptian woman, when Moses is offered to nurse at the hand of an Egyptian nursemaid, he will refuse to do so, right? That's one of the famous midrashes, that he refuses to do so. He refuses to drink from the milk of Egypt, and he's going to stay kind of in the pathway of the milk of Israel. Joseph Who's he going to marry? This is a big one. Remember, Joseph is this beautiful man. People are attracted to him. Women are attracted to him. His former boss's wife is making advances towards him. But who is he actually going to marry? Where is it going to go in the right path and purity? Who is going to who's going to create the seed of Joseph? Who's going to create the next two tribes that are going to come from Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh? Who's going to be that woman? Who's going to be that great woman? We've already met incredible women in the Torah. We've met Sarah. We've met Rivka. We've met Rachel and Leah and the handmaidens, Bilhah and Zilpah. And we've met even women like the babysitter, like the nanny of Rivka's, who's going to travel. And then when she dies, she's going to be buried in Beit El. Who are we going to now meet? Who is this Osnat that is going to marry Joseph? Who's going to be this person, right? Remember, our lines are not patrilineal only, right? They're matrilineal in terms of being Jewish. In any case, the Bible time, it may have been a little bit different, but the woman is so, and so obvious, I don't even have to say it. But you would have thought it's not important. I don't know. But of course, it's so important. Biblical genetics, holy genetics. Who is going to be that Osnat? Well, we don't know. According to the Bible, on the simple reading, she is the daughter of the very boss's wife that was coming on to him. But the Medrash, the Jewish lore, the Jewish metadata, should we call it that? I like that very much. The Jewish metadata on the Bible, right? The metadata. I like that very much, metadata. The Jewish metadata is the Midrash. And the Midrash tells us that, do you remember the rape of Dinah? Well, Dinah was raped by Shechem in the city of Shechem. We learned about that last week. But you didn't know, because it's in the metadata, that she became impregnated. And she had a child. And that child was this little girl, Osnat. Now, the brothers thought to themselves, this child must be killed. Oh, my God. Must be killed because it's a product of this horrific rape, totally unworthy fellow Shechem, and the child is therefore destined for nothing good. Let's off this child, and thereby continue the line of purity. But Jacob knew that there was something up, according to the metadata, and the Medrash tells us that he wrote a kamea, a small scroll. With God's names. It's a protective kind of energetic scroll, shall we say. And he put it on the little girl and he sent her down to Egypt so that she would be safe. And she got adopted by the house of Potiphar, where Joseph was working. And it was Osnat, the daughter of his sister, in the place, in the city that it really belongs to Joseph, where he's going to be buried, from Shechem, that he gets married, and where the two tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh are coming from. This is part of the metadata. He indeed marries Osnat, a very holy girl. And this girl, this woman, gives birth to these two young men, Ephraim and Manasseh, who are in the end going to be the replacement for Joseph in terms of the tribal system. There are 12 tribes, but there were 12 sons were really born. Joseph becomes kind of gets taken out and replaced by these two. And so there's 13 tribes. Then the Levites kind of pop out and they are their own thing. And so you have, you really have like 13 tribes, but the Levites don't count in that tribal system in the same way. In any case, my friends, that is some of the metadata on the marriage of Joseph, which is so important and so holy. There is, of course, more in this Torah portion, but I'm going to wait for next week to talk with Rabbi Mike about the brothers and their efforts to navigate the trickery and the challenges that Joseph is going to throw at them. We're going to talk about that again next week. But in the meantime, my friends, let us learn the lessons. First thing, let's learn the lesson of standing proud when you're called for redemption, to accept it, to be ready for it, to be ready for it at any time, and to just be ready at a drop of a hat to be like, oh, God's calling me, redemption time, I'm there. And at the same time, to also know how to prepare, like Joseph did, to prepare for great times, and for tough times ahead by girding ourselves, girding our loins, learning Torah, doing charity work, doing good work, doing kindness. Let us also remember what I said at the beginning of the show, what I talked about, which is the issue of stretching out our hand to do as much as we can with this life, to give, to build, to strengthen, and to be empowered, to feel inside that I am powerful when I do something good for Israel. I am a hero for Israel. I am a hero for the Jewish people. I'm fighting for the cause. And the forces of darkness, if you don't know that there's forces of darkness out there, then you don't really know what Hanukkah is about. Hanukkah is about the forces of darkness being the backdrop to the forces of light. And I could tell you that if you need to go to the forces of darkness and see them, just go to Twitter. You know, no problem. All right, folks, I want to finish off the show by reminding everybody of our sponsors. We're going to have some more sponsors soon. We have some real estate sponsors coming soon. I'm very excited about that. We have two upcoming real estate in the Land of Israel sponsors that are going to help out the show. We're going to talk about that more. Remind me about that if I forget. I want to thank the people at Tchelet, T-E-K-H-E-L-E-T.com. That's the Blue String, True Blue Jew. Many of you, more than 10 people at least, wrote to me, you know, wanting to win the contest, the True Blue Jew contest. The first three will get an email notification from me this week, hopefully. And those of you who tried but did not, try again, because you certainly deserve to win. And the very fact that you're listening to the show and thinking these thoughts, you've already won. and you can, of course, if you didn't win, and that just means that you should get it for your own self. Get yourself some Tchelet. I had it, my friend Yechiel wrote to me and said, I already have Tchelet, so I don't want to enter the contest. I also want to thank the good people at Janglo, janglo.net, who inform us about what's going on in the Land of Israel in the English language, helping us navigate this great and awesome and challenging sometimes country, our homeland, our reborn nation, our commonwealth. I want to thank the good people at Hebron, Hebron.org, HebronFund.org, HebronFund.org. We have a weekly trip to Hebron. It'll take you to the Tomb of Rachel, to the Tombs of the Fathers and Mothers, explain to you the story of Hebron in English. Fabulous. Do not miss it. And I know many of you are coming, you know, for January. Make sure that you're coming on a Hebron trip for sure. What else? I want to thank the Land of Israel Network, which has fabulous shows. It's absolutely a fabulous network. And deserves your support. I want to thank the people who are empowered to support this show, to help the show. Thank you so much for your efforts. And may your efforts as people who broadcast, you are the broadcasters of Torah, truth, and Israel to the world, continue to succeed. So I'm not thanking you. I'm more blessing you that your continued efforts for Israel are strong, and that in your lifetime you will have been known as a fighter for Israel. God bless you, folks, wherever you are. Surely I miss Rabbi Mike Foyer, and I miss all of you. Write me an email, yishai@thelandofisrael.com. Send me a picture. Here we go. Hold on, let me think here. Okay, I'm going to give a prize to the best, and I'm going to have to judge this subjectively. This is tricky now. I'm putting myself out on a limb. I want to give a prize to anybody who sends me a beautiful picture of them, maybe their family and their dog, lighting the Hanukkah candles. I want a beautiful picture of my friends lighting the Hanukkah candles, and I also want you to give me permission to put that up on my Facebook page. If you send me a beautiful picture, I will pick three people, and I will send them. I will make sure that they get a prize, winning. I think it's going to be from my new one of my new sponsors coming up, which is Alpha Male Beard Balm. My friend Eitan Press has started a new company where he's making beard balm, which says anoint your beard, shape, soften, and shine. It's called Aleph Male, like Alpha Male, but it's Aleph Male, and it's got the menorah on it, and it's this whole beard balm thing. Now, maybe you're female, and you don't have a beard. Maybe you are male and don't have a beard. But what does that even matter? It's a good-smelling, cool bomb, and you win it on the show. What the heck does it even matter? You probably have a friend who has a beard bomb, or maybe you could use this beard bomb on your like leg hair and become a faster swimmer. I don't know what, but I'm trying here to promote this awesome thing called Aleph Male. Check it out. And it's alephmale.com. And actually, I have a coupon code there called Thank Yishai. And the people that send me a great picture of their menorah, of them lighting the menorah, with their family, with their dog, with their beer, with their guns, with their Bible, I don't know with what, okay? You can send that to me, whatever you want to send me. I want to have permission to put that up on my Facebook page and say, you know, here's my listeners from, I don't know, from Honolulu or Colorado or Northern California, or of course my good friends in Switzerland who support the show, my friends the Michels. Thank you so much for all your support. Or from my friends from Brooklyn, or from my friends in Georgia, anywhere around the world. God bless you folks. I want to hear from you, and I want to wish you a great and happy Hanukkah, full of gratitude for this time. Yes, Hashem, please destroy the dark forces that are against us. Let us be victorious. But at the same time, folks, let's just take a step back for 1 second, at least one of the days of Hanukkah, dedicated to total gratitude and thankfulness for everything that Hashem has given us. I am grateful to you. I am grateful to you for being there. I'm grateful to the Land of Israel Network. I'm grateful to the machinery that lets me do the show. I'm grateful to God, and I'm grateful to His Torah. And I'm even grateful for me. I'm grateful that I'm alive. I'm so grateful, Hashem. Thank you so much for my life. And I really, Hashem, please send blessings, health, success, and love, and joy to the hearts of all the people listening today. And all of us, let us be thankful for all the good things and even the bad things. God bless you folks wherever you are. Chag Chanukah Sameach. And be strong, be connected, stay tuned, and broadcast the message and the light, the Pirsumei Nisa, the broadcasting of the light of Israel to the world. That's our job. God bless you folks. Stay tuned. Lots of love and shalom.
Hanukkah light burns so bright. Hanukkah, oh Hanukkah, come light the menorah. Open my lockers in the air sometimes.
Light one candle for the Maccabee children.
Hi, this is Josh Haston, host of Israel Uncensored. And on behalf of all of the show hosts here, we want to wish our listeners all over the world a happy Hanukkah and all the best from Jerusalem. Happy holidays from the team here at thelandofisrael.com.